Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what's the whole network galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds, for whatever you love. Infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
From athletic stuff like a full court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half mile stroll. Get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Well, Fred, it's good to hear your voice. How are you doing tonight?
Well, got a little bit of a fog in my voice. I ain't been doing too good. He's getting old, I guess.
Well, I tell you what,
In fact, I'll be 89 next week.
Next week?
Yeah, well, Monday.
You got me by, you're the guy that keeps me going, though, see. I'm going to be 80 in October, but so you got me by 9 years, not quite nine.
I knew it was 9 or 10.
Yeah, and you are absolutely an inspiration to me. I was my buddy Randy Smith there and I were on a podcast this week, and I don't know, it'll probably be out next week, I guess, with Chris Powell. And Chris asked me about that, you know, about getting older and how am I handling it and all that. And I said, well, it's, you know, basically it's just one day at a time. You know, it sneaks up on you, and there it is. And you know, so you just have to deal with it. But I think the key to your longevity has been your staying active, the fact that you do things. You get out with your dogs, you hunt, and that. What would you say?
Well, hunting certainly don't hurt me none, that's for sure. I feel better in the woods and everything else. And but it'll be actually 3 weeks since I've been in the woods as come Saturday night. That's how bad our weather is. Now, I did go one night. I just figured I'll take a chance, see if I can hit a track. And Jack Kane went with me, and we did. We put two coon in holes. We didn't tree nothing. We saw the one. The other one we couldn't see, but we saw the one back in the hole. And other than that one night, that's all. I've been out in be 3 weeks come Saturday. So two more days.
Well, that's a long layoff for you, because you go about every night when you get a chance, don't you?
I went about 4 or 5 days ago, driving in the snow with a truck, looking to see around some den trees I know of, see if anything's coming out. And I got a girl that hunts with me occasionally, Mary Galt. She's Scott Perky's her nephew. He's a coon hunter, and he hunts. Got us some nice dogs there. But anyhow, she told me one time, she lives right on the main drag in the town of Denora, where Stan Musial, the baseball player, was born. And anyhow, she lives in the main drag, and she's feeding on her back porch. The coons come up from the river down below. She feed nine at one time. This is the best day she ever had, she told me, her night. 19 coon, 6 possums, and 3 cats on her back porch.
My goodness.
And she don't put corn out or nothing like that. She cooks macaroni, all kind of food. I says, you're going to be broke. I says, you won't have no money at all. I says, you feed them all that stuff. And she said, well, I like to take care of my animals. And she's my coon barometer. I call her up and ask her, how many coons was on the porch last night? She says, well, in fact, I talked to her about 2 hours ago. She says, nothing's been coming. When are they going to come? I says, well, when we get some warm weather, I said, they'll come out. I says, supposed to get warm next week. Maybe that'll help. So,
yeah. Well, you know, I know when I lived in Michigan, I had a bird feeder out back. It was the first time I'd ever done that. And I got one of these bird books, and, you know, and I kind of identified all the different species that were coming to the feeder, and it's fun. It's fun.
I just put some corn out at the end of the porch tonight. 5 deer they're eating right now.
Yeah.
But no coons.
Well, when my brother lived in Virginia, he had the way his house was situated, it looked toward the woods. And he would spread out some corn in his front yard there for the deer. And, of course, that attracted turkeys, too. You know, he was out in the country, and he, you know, but he didn't hunt those animals. I mean, he just, he liked to watch them, you know.
Liked to take care of them and see them.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the thing that the people that don't hunt don't understand us, Fred. We're so misunderstood. You know, they think a hunter just wants to get out there and kill everything in sight and you know, blood and guts and all that. No.
I got a woman lives next door to me, and she lives in a trailer over there. And I'll call her up. I say, Barb, look out your back window. I says, look at my by my porch. And she says, oh, my God, all them deer. She said, I didn't think we had that many deer. And that was a couple of days ago. There was about 11 out there. They come 4 to 6 o'clock every evening. A bunch comes. My yard looks like there's 500 been through it and so in the snow.
Yeah.
But they got to eat. So.
Yeah. Now, does Pennsylvania allow you to bait for deer when you're hunting?
Well, yeah, I believe you could do it up until, maybe, don't quote me on this, but I think 30 days or so before season comes in, you have to quit or something like that. But
my friend Gary Knapp down in West Virginia, he lives down between Huntington and Charleston, and he was at one time the president of the West Virginia Bear Hunters Association. And there's a couple of bills that have come up now in West Virginia.
I lost you.
Yeah, well, I'm still battling this thing with my throat. But they are permitted down there to bait for deer. They can, and I don't know what the restrictions are, what you can use, how much you can use and all that. I think there are some limitations. But what they've done is they've asked that to change the regulation to say that if you are baiting for deer and a bear comes into that bait, you would be permitted to shoot that bear over the bait. Uh-huh. Well, see, they don't allow baiting of bears down there. And I know it's been, you know, it's been widely misused because you just don't walk out in the woods and shoot a bear with a bow.
No.
You know, you got to have some way to attract him to get him in within range, you know. So, but anyway, they're into that down there now with that. I just wondered what the Pennsylvania laws were.
Johnny Quinch from West Virginia, he lives in, I can't think the name, Tom, begins with a P.
Pennsboro?
Petersburg,
okay, yeah.
He lives down there. He's coon hunted with me for about 30 years off and on, and he was a big-time bear hunter. He had some good bear dog. Why? He quit about 5 years ago, and I don't know why, because he was gung-ho and that stuff. And he's got two cabins that I hunted at down there at his place. Well, I went down there coon hunting because he'd been up here a number of times. I never went down there. He kept telling me come down. And he had some bait pals out there. We treed the heck out of coons here. They were everywhere. But he tells me ain't nothing for him to see a bear up there where his cabins are.
Oh, I would imagine, yeah. Well, when I lived in Michigan, the deer season came in for bow hunting on September 1st, I believe. It may have been the 15th, but I believe it was the 1st. And, you know, those guys would set their stands out and had their tree stands and all that, and they would have bait piles there, you know. It might be corn, it might be sugar beets, it might, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Pumpkins left over from Halloween and Thanksgiving or what. So anyway, a lot of times I would strike coons, you know, off those bait piles. And it was funny to me. Most of those guys up there didn't even know there was a coon hunter in the world, you know, because I hunted a lot by myself, and I was kind of like a low-impact guy. You know, I just go in and shut my lights off. I had permission, you know. I wasn't violating, but I just didn't want everybody to know what I was doing. And But anyway, I hunted right through the deer seasons and never had any issues. And and nobody ever complained about me being in there until the last week I lived up there, and then I got run out of the woods twice in one week. It wasn't even deer season yet. It was the week before, and these people were paranoid about their deer. You know,
they don't even let certain relatives on their property come deer season.
That's right.
You got to be in the clan real good to get permission on some of the good places.
You know,
deer hunt.
Things like that remind me that the way people think about deer and how, you know, they're so afraid that we're going to disturb this deer's pattern of feeding and all this. All that stuff's been debunked by studies for many, many years. But I kind of liken that to guys and training pups. And training dogs. It's like there's a sacred circle around a tree. And if a dog is inside that tree, a circle, you should never correct that dog. Don't do anything around the tree because you'll keep that dog from treeing, which to me is hogwash. But what do you think about that?
The only thing I probably wouldn't... do to a dog if it needed correction, that is, I've done it, so I shouldn't say that, but get on him really bad and beat on him in front of the other dog like that. But I've done it, and it didn't. I feel most of them forget about it 2 days later.
Yeah, but, exactly. Well, there's little things that you need to correct, like face barking, for instance, or a dog that's jealous at the tree, you know. Or
one of the best dogs I ever had, I rate him definitely in the top five, and maybe he was number one. I liked him better because he had such a good mouth and everything. I used to call him Treat in the night hunts a mile away, and the guys in the cast say, let's move closer so we can hear if our dogs are there. And I loved that because he had such a good mouth. Scotty Perky is lucky right now. Got a young red dog, only 13 or 14 months old, and he got a mouth just like my old Hickory dog, and I like him. He's a nice dog. He's extra good for his age. He's won several $100 with him already in PKC.
Hey, well, that's certainly
good.
But
he went clear down to a red bone hunt, drove by himself all the way to Louisiana to a PKC red bone hunt there for big money. This was just about 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago. And I couldn't wait till he got down there and called me and tell me how he's. He said, I said, how you doing? He said, I should have stayed home. He said, this is the worst I ever seen the dog do in my life. And I've hunted with the dog probably at least 8 or 10 times. I think he's one of the better young dogs I've ever seen. And he goes hunting. He got a mouth. He's a tree dog. And he's got his whole life ahead of him. He told me he'd treat a possum with him down there. And the dog, he's never treated a possum before until he went to Louisiana. Scotty was disappointed. But those things happen. I mean,
yeah.
Those
Cajun possums may smell a little different. I don't know. Yeah.
You don't want them to happen, especially when you drive 1,500 miles to go.
Boy. Well, how many times have you been in the woods when the guy said, man, I've never seen him do that before?
Yeah, I never saw him do that before.
That's for sure. Well, hey, I don't know if we discussed it last time you and I talked or not. Did I tell you about the kid there near Nubbin Moore that wanted a red bone pup, and we found a red bone pup for him?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man. Well, I had this kid on the podcast. Let's see. Hold on just a minute, Fred. Well, since we talked last time, Fred, I wanted to tell you about a situation that my buddy Nubbin Moore, you know, I've got a few regulars on this podcast. You're, of course, probably at the top of the list, you and Nubbin together, because I've had each of you on here several times.
But, I had a guy, excuse me, no, I had a guy from West Virginia write me a letter. I just got it about 4 or 5 days ago. And he says, remember I came up and hunted with you one time? You had that truck that you drove through the woods and trees hit it. And you said, don't worry about the scratches because all my trucks are undercoated on the outside. You know? And you don't ever have to clean them or anything like that. You just get a can of undercoating and spray over any big major scratches. He said, I couldn't get over how you drove that truck through the woods and that. He said, you took me to a place we treed 3 coon. He said, and I bought a puppy off you. Well, he wanted to know if I had any other puppies. I said, yeah. No, but I got a good female. I says, I'm thinking she should be in heat in April. I'm thinking about breeding her to a dog up here, meaning Scotty Perky's dog, because he's the nicest young red dog I've seen in a long time.
I see.
Well, I wish I owned him.
And, yeah, I hear you.
There's 4 partners on this dog, though, that Scotty got. Him, Tony Dominguez, down in Texas.
That's a name I'm familiar with.
And Alan Halotta in California.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the 4th partner. I said, which one? Everybody owns a leg or what? And
we got a plot dog down in North Carolina. I got 3 owners on it, and somebody on social media says, well, you need 3 owners for 1 dog. And I, of course, being the smart I am, I said, well, when you got something good, you like to share it, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is a nice one that Scotty's got.
Great.
Go ahead about Bill, whatever you wanted to tell me there.
Yeah. Well, Nubbin lives in Alabama, and across the road from him is this really nice farm. Actually, it's kind of just a show place. I don't know how much they actually farm it, but it has those board fences, looks like a Kentucky horse farm, and it's got some beautiful lakes on it, which Nubbin enjoys fishing, and he's been a good neighbor to those folks. Well, and they kind of
what town does this buddy of yours, this Nubbin,
okay,
he's
in a little town called Sterrett, Sterrett, Alabama. It's about 30 minutes out of Birmingham. It's between Birmingham and Leeds, Alabama. Do you remember Jimmy Fisher, the Redbone guy? Jimmy was from Leeds, Alabama. He's the one that bought Blakesley's Northern Chief from Chick Scarborough down in my hometown.
West Virginia. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, Nubbin kind of helps look after this place. He doesn't actually work there, but he's just a good neighbor to those folks. And there's a lady there that's the gentleman of the that owned the place passed away, and his wife still, I believe, lives there. But at any rate, a lady that works on that farm contacted Nubbin and said, "My son read the book Where the Red Fern
Grows,"
and he is just head over heels wanting a red bone, and it needs to be, well, first of all, he said wanting a coon dog, and Nubbin says, well, what kind? Do you want a walker or black and tan? What? And she said, oh, no, it's got to be a red bone, and it's got to be a female. Like Little Ann in that book, you know, because my boy said Little Ann was the smartest one of the dogs. Well, anyway, I talked to this kid, and we actually had him on the podcast, and he's a great kid. But the story is in the dog. Nubbin looked around. He asked me if I knew anybody that had any red puppies, and I kind of went down the list of Redbone people that I knew and so forth. Well, somehow the name of Bill Feldman came up. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned to you earlier, you know, you knew who he was. I think he's out around the Kansas City area out there, maybe.
I think St. Louis.
St. Louis, maybe. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, they made the deal to buy a Redbone. Called him up. Sure enough, he had pups. And this puppy's got a great resume. She's out of a pair of Grand Knight champions. And, you know, checked the references a little bit and found out that Bill has good dogs. And I believe you told me you hunted with him one time, maybe.
Yeah, I run against him in a night hunt. It was a Redbone hunt. I know that.
Uh-huh.
And Mike Young, that hunts Johnny Coffin's dog, was cast.
Yeah.
Myself, him. I believe there was a fourth guy, but I think he withdrew or something after a while.
Well, I talked to Mike at Autumn Oaks about pups, and he had some, but I guess they found this one beforehand. But yeah. Well, listen, let me cut to this. It was an 8-hour drive out there. Mom and Dad and the boy loaded up and went to Missouri. And you can listen to the podcast. I'm looking here for the name of it, and I can't remember what the name of the podcast was. But my listeners will remember this. Anyway, he said, I asked him, I said, how did you pick that puppy? Did they have it picked for you, or did you get to pick them yourself? And he said, no, they had her picked out for me, but said she came right straight to me, and she really liked me. So it was kind of love at first sight. But let's go forward a little bit. That little gal is amazing. She's treeing turn loose coons. She's treed drags. She's treed coon tails on a fishing rod from the time she was just little. And what a mouth she's got, and tree dog. I'm telling you, she's about 6 months old right now. I don't think they've ever actually hunted her at night yet, but she's just going to be a real good one. I said,
that's good.
I told Nubbin, I said,
I
said, you're going to be over there trying to buy that kid's dog. You better leave him alone.
When they made that movie, I was there when that director of that movie from Hollywood came and bought them pups off Manfred Craver. That was at either Franklin or Frankfort, Indiana. Redbone Day was held at one of them two times. I can't remember. It was one of them. And I was there. What that movie director did, he bought them pups off of Manfred Craver for that movie. And naturally, to make the movie that they did on that, they had to have a couple more red dogs when they got different ages. And they kept them dogs, though, for almost a year, Manfred told me. And they paid him for it, whatever he asked for him at the time. And when the movie was complete, they sent the pups back to Manfred free of charge and give them back to him.
Oh, I'll be told.
After they completed the movie and that.
Yeah. Well, there's the name of a guy that was a real class gentleman, and I was fortunate to work some with him, you know, as a field rep when I first started with UKC. He managed Autumn Oaks, you know, and and then that fell in my lap after I went to UKC. But yeah, I remember how much Fred Miller, the owner of UKC, liked Manfred. He really liked him, and I know when Manfred passed away, Fred drove from Kalamazoo down to Greencastle there and went to his funeral.
Uh-huh.
But He was Manfred. He wore that little fedora hat and a sport jacket, and he didn't look like the typical coon hunter, did he?
No, he was a businessman.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of somebody that Fred Miller appreciated and so forth, Fred Miller called me up one time. Oh, this was I don't even begin to remember how many years ago, but it was a long time. When he was first picking people for being master hounds at various qualifying hunts and so forth. And he says, Jimmy Carpenter recommended you. He said, how would you like to be a master hounds at that? I said, I sure appreciate you calling me and offering me this. But I says, I make enough enemies just running in the hunts, let alone trying to settle an argument or anything else. I said, I'm going to give you a guy's name. He lives and breathes nothing but coon dogs 7 days a week. He's a first man at a night hunt and the last man to leave. And he knows every rule inside out and backwards. I says, he's don't have the best attire and he's a poor boy, but I guarantee you he'll never make you mad or sorry that you ever hired him. He's the best you'll ever get. Called, and that was Larry Packey.
I knew Larry you nailed him for sure.
And he called me up about maybe a year later. Miller did. He says, Fred, he says, you know that time I called you and offered you a job at UKC Mets and you recommended Larry Pay? He says, I'm sure glad you did. He says, he's one of the better ones I'll ever have.
Oh, yeah. Larry was a great one. And that's one of the things that I'm so thankful for, having had that job over the years, were the field reps that I got to work with. Many of them I hired myself. There was a couple there that had me scratching my head. After we brought them aboard, you know, but by and large, they were a great group of guys, got together, worked together. Your buddy, Fred Lubert, was one of them.
Oh, hey, he was a character. He was a character.
Oh, yeah. And just, we called him, among our circle of field reps, they called him the Silver Fox. You know, he had that gray hair all combed back and all. But, yeah, that was the greatest benefit or reward for my job over the years were those guys. And, you know, we've got one down in Virginia there that's going through a real tough time with his health right now, Lindell Price. And he was one of the top, you know,
he's
guys.
He's been there a long time.
He came from UKC and came to AKC with me, and so I got to work with him several years there, and he would always come up and hunt with me in the fall in Michigan.
Uh-huh.
So we got to be real good buddies, but he's fighting a battle that he's I don't know if there's any hope for that. That dementia is just a really hard one to deal
with. That's where my wife passed away from.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, those guys and those memories of those guys. And you know, today, Chris Powell, and I don't want to steal any of Chris's thunder because he had put together some really good questions for Randy Smith and me. And he wanted to talk about why, you know, what really drives a person to want a coon hunt besides just, you know, getting trophies and or winning money. You know, what is it about it? What is it about down deep that makes a guy a coon hunter, especially a lifelong coon hunter? Now, Randy, I think, and Chris are the same age. I think I'm going to say they may not like it, but I think they're 57. And, of course, you know, I'm going to be 80 and you're going to be 89. But what down deep is it with you, Fred, that's always made coon hunting so important to you?
My mother bought me a. She knew I was animal crazy. I loved to go to the zoo and look at all the animals and stuff like that. I'd get her to take me to the zoo when I was 7, 8 years old, and I was fascinated by them. Well, there was two guys. One's name was John Champ. He was from Buchanan, West Virginia, but he moved to Pennsylvania, and he had a roofing company up here in a town that I used to live in, Duquesne, where I was born and raised. And he had a guy that was, his name was Otis Timms. He was from Pittsburgh, which is 25 miles from Duquesne at the time. And this guy had coon dogs, red bones. And anyhow, they used to stop. My dad owned a bar, a bar and restaurant for 38 years in Duquesne. And they used to stop in there when they had a job working in Duquesne on roofs or something, putting a new roof on. And I'd hear them talking about dogs and coon hunting. Oh, that fascinated me. So I'd listen to them. And they kept telling me they're going to take me someday. They're going to take me. And, well, they didn't show up several times. They just forgot about it, I guess. I don't know. But anyhow, one day they told me, we'll be there Saturday night. And he says, you be ready. I went to the movie. I used to go to the movies, the cowboy movies on Saturday. It was 14 cents to get in. And this was a regular movie theater, and I was in the movie theater. I forgot all about the coon hunt, and all at once, somebody hollers real loud in the movie theater, Fred Moran. I thought, what did I do now? And I walked to, I walked back to the where the ushers are, and there's a guy from my dad's bar that used to drink there all the time. He says, hey, you were supposed to go coon hunting. Them guys are up there waiting for you up your dad's place. He said, come out and get in the car, and I'll ride you up there. They send him down to get me at the movie theater. So I hurry up, that's changed great. My clothes, and they took me hunting. And they had a two red bones, king and queen. And they're both good-looking red bones. They didn't have papers or nothing at that time, but they were as good-looking as any registered dog I saw.
Yeah.
Well, we treat a possum. Oh, that fascinated me. They're out there beating the dogs. And me, I thought they did the greatest job in the world. Even though it was a possum, I was satisfied with that because I was already trapping at 8 years old. And if I caught a possum, I was tickled to death. And anyhow, so that hooked me right there. We didn't treat no coon that night. But then they took me the following Saturday, and we treat a coon. And at that time, they had a season on coons in Pennsylvania. They do now, too, as far as a killing season. But anyhow, needless to say, they shook it out and let the dogs get it. Oh, that got me hooked. We came back home. The two guys went to go in my dad's bar and probably have a drink. I went out to their truck, and I cut the tail off that coon. They didn't know it. I just cut the tail off that coon, took it for a souvenir. And the next day or two days later, and he said, well, you cut that tail off that coon? I said, yep. He says, you can't show that to nobody. He says, game wardens will catch us, and we'll have to pay a fine. I said, there's no game wardens around here. And there wasn't at that time, not many anyhow. And that got me hooked. And believe it or not, contrary to being the Red Dogs did the job and did a nice job, when I was 11 years old, I had money saved up from Christmas, birthday, and everything else. It wasn't much, but I had 50 bucks, which was a lot for a kid back in the early 50s. So I wanted a coon dog for myself. And I looked everywhere trying to find where I could find a coon dog. I got a guy that used to come to my dad's bar. He was a big time bigler. And I says, his name was Joe Felton. And I said, Joe, I said, where can I buy a coon dog at? He said, that guy where I buy my beagles got coon dogs. So he gave me the name and a phone number of the guy. And I got some guy from my dad's bar. My dad could care less. If you give him Merchant's Bally, he'd probably give it back to you. And he could care less. He didn't hunt. He didn't care. I taught my dad to hunt. He didn't teach me to hunt. I taught my dad, but he never went coon hunting. I'm sorry I never got to take him. But I did get him deer hunting, and he killed a deer, and he was happy. But anyhow, get back to the coon dog. I went up to this, he was a dog dealer, but I didn't know what a dog dealer was at the time. And I went there and I seen all the beagles. I got a guy to take me up from my dad's bar. I had a couple dollars I give him for gas. It was about 15 miles away from where I lived. And I seen all them dogs. And I went nuts on a blue dog. I thought they were so pretty, all them specks on it and everything else. I thought
you and a lot of other people thought that.
He had a red dog up there, but I wasn't interested in that red dog. I thought I'd try that blue dog because he just looked so much prettier than the other dog. So I bought that red dog for 50. And the guy, he wouldn't even talk to me. He kept talking to the guy that brought me there.
Now, and you said you bought the red dog, but you mean you bought the blue dog, didn't you?
Yeah. I bought. And I said, don't talk to him. Talk to me. I'm the one that's buying the dog. And like I say, I was only 11 years old. And he hesitated in even selling me the dog. He kept wanting to talk to that guy that brought me. And I finally convinced him when he seen that $50. So I bought the dog for $50. Well, I started hunting him every night I could go. And I had a buddy of mine that hunted with me, Pete Bendel. And he was a character. I'll tell a fast story. Doesn't have nothing to do with coon hunt, Bob Pete. He was maybe a year
parents,
older.
Parents, you may want to have the children leave the room here.
No. They can stay.
Okay.
Pete was about a year older than me, and he told me one time he was down along the river, which went a big river and goes into Pittsburgh called Monongahela. It went right through Duquesne. And he was lifting big rocks to find crabs to fish with. He lifted a big stone, and there was a dead baby underneath that stone. He says he ran he ran down to the police station, which was about a mile away, and he figured he couldn't wait till the paper came out that night and says, Pete Bendel finds baby dead in the river. And the headline was, local police find baby in a river.
Oh, man. Didn't even give him a headline, huh?
Yes, he was so disappointed that they didn't even mention him. The local police found that baby. But getting back to coon hunting, the dog, I kept hunting it, and all it did was run rabbits. I was so teed off. Nowadays, I wouldn't say, give it a second thought. It'd have been a dead dog the second night, guaranteed. But I give him to Pete. I said, I don't want him. I said, you can have him. I knew the man, the dog dealer, wasn't going to give me no money back or anything. So I give the dog to Pete, and Pete says that he was gun-shy, too, and he shot the gun. He said he did run a rabbit, but when he shot the gun, he never seen it after that. He didn't. I don't know if that was the truth or what, but there was no name tag on the dog. So where the dog ever ended up, I have no idea. And then I found out and realized how hard it is to get a coon dog. I went through plenty of them until I was about 14 or 15, then I got a hold of one that was pretty darn good. I wished I had him today in a way. And he was in the top five also. I called him Lee. He was an older red dog. A buddy of mine who was about 5 years older than me was already in Camp Lejeune down North Carolina. And he wrote me a letter that there's a good red dog he hunts with down there. And the guy wanted $125 for it. And I scraped the money, borrowed some from my mother. My dad had never given me a dime for a dog, but my mother would. And I bought the dog, and today I'd get $10,000 out of that dog, no trouble at all. But that was a start. Lee did me a lot. He trained me. I didn't train him. And he was a good one.
Well, that's the way it usually is with the good ones. We learn more from them than anything. Well, you know, Fred, you chose the Redbone breed, and I chose the Plot. And in my case, it was through my dad, because that's what he had, you know. Mm-hmm. And we, if I wanted to go hunting, I went hunting with the Plot, because there wasn't anything else around there, you know, unless I went with someone else. But both our breeds are kind of on the bottom of the list as far as numbers,
right,
of
they
dogs.
Are.
The Red Bones, back in the day when I was at UKC, I used to know the numbers. And, of course, the Walkers were always the most.
Number one.
Yeah, and then it was kind of sometimes a toss-up between English dogs and black and tans. Blue Ticks would be in there fairly close. And then the Red Bones and then the Plots. Why do you think that the Red Bone, you know, in the early days of the hunts and field trials and all that, man, they were the winners. They were the big winners. The first night champion ever was a Red Bone.
Red Bone, yeah, over in Ohio.
Yeah.
Childress is the guy's name that had him.
Yeah. I just wonder why that, what's your thoughts on that? Why that
I don't know.
I
thought they caught on a lot, don't get me wrong, but I thought they'd be even more popular than they are at the present time. But I don't know. The Walkers swayed a lot of people. There's no question about that. And there were some good ones. And there's no question about that part. And like I tell everybody, I says, hell, they ought to win. There's six to every other breed's one.
That's right.
And
that's always worked for us Plot people.
I've hunted with some good Walkers. Wish I'd paint them or something I've hunted with some good ones.
Well, you know, sometimes there's a difference in what a guy likes in a hound. You know, the experience of hunting from the time you go out there and then snap the dog till you take him home is different for us, for different people. You know, these younger fellows, a lot of them now, they don't even want to see that dog until he's in the next zip code, you know, and they can,
right,
they can hear him and get to him somehow and get him scored before the time's up. Other guys just, you know, really, really enjoy that experience of having a dog that goes out there and hits a cold track and works it up. It's got a good mouth, classic hound mouth, and it's a good locator and all those kind of things. And I'll put myself in that category. You know, I mean, somewhere in between. I don't want a dog to stand on his head and cold trail all night. Don't get me wrong, but you know, we have different likes, you know, and maybe it's just the style of the breed that doesn't appeal to some. But we don't have the gene pool in your breed or mine to pick from like these Walker people do. I mean, they've got a lot of choices for pups. You know,
that's true. That's true. Red dogs, I can... one guy that I had good luck with, I bought pups from a lot of different guys besides raising my own. I'm a neighbor of yours at once upon a time up in Michigan, Marlon Martin. I got had some good luck with some of his puppies, and I trained one. I think I bought him when he was about 6 months old off of Marlon. He told me he's going to make a dog, and he did. I called him Buster. I kept him till he was 5 or 6 years old, and I sold him for a good price down in Mississippi to Dan Gardner, an old time Redbone man.
Absolutely, yeah.
In fact, I talked to him. I talked to him yesterday, and he still got Buster. He's eight. He'll be eight in March, I think. And but I had good luck with different guys breeding and so forth. I knew. I have no patience. I can't stand to feed a dog at 8 months old and he ain't trained his own coon by then. I hunt enough. There's no excuses there. He ought to be doing pretty good at least by 7, 8 months old. Now, it would be different if I didn't hunt like I did. Then it's an excuse on my part. That I didn't give the dog a fair chance. But
well, you're a little bit stricter than most. Most would say by a year old, you know. That's the way Nubbin, my buddy, he's had some good ones down through the years. And he said if a dog's not doing it, something to please me pretty much by a year old, he's gone, you know.
I had a guy come here to my place years ago. I don't remember his name. He called me, asked me if I had a dog for show. I said, yeah, I got a dog for show. So he came down, and the dog I was showing him was, I don't even remember now, but I'd say he was 4 years old. And he's a fair coon dog. He wasn't no powerhouse or anything. And the guy wasn't giving no powerhouse price. But I knew he'd treat coon. I said, before we left, I had a young female that was doing real good. She was 5 months old. And anyhow, I said, do you mind if I take this pup along? I said, it ain't going to do nothing. I said, the dog you're looking at is going to tree the coon. But I said, I want to give this dog all the education I could, and I'm trying to make her better. That young female treed 2 or 3 coon that night. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And I know to this day that guy probably thought I put a ringer in there or something like and I didn't. It shocked me.
Yeah.
And but certain dogs click and depends what they're out of. Scotty Perky, who's a farm boy, he only lives 6 miles from me. He milks 170-some cows.
Oh, my.
Plus, he works for my kid as a block layer also in the mornings till 1 o'clock. He won the coon dog. He didn't have no money. His dad came up to me one day. I was out there to farm. He said, why don't you get my kid a coon dog? He says, he wants to go coon hunting so bad he ain't got no money. Well, that was a lie. They got money. He just didn't want to spend it, but that was all right. I called Scotty up about a week later. I said, I got a female here. She's 7 months old. I said, she's doing good with the other dog. She's running and tree with it, but you got to put the time in it and make it better. I said, you can have it for nothing. I'll bring it up there tonight and we'll go coon hunt. Took her up there. The first coon, they struck, the female split tree.
Oh, man.
I'm sick. I'm saying I can't take a dog like that back off the kid. I just give it to him. And he's only 14 years old at the time. And that killed me.
Well, Fred, I'm ashamed of you for even thinking that.
I did. And he called the dog Pepsi. He made her a Grand Knight champion and everything else. He had her for about 8-10 years, and he got her killed by a car at 2 in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you never know when that switch is going to flip, as they say, and they're going to. But this hound hunting is definitely not an exact science. And any guy that says he's got a corner on it, you know, and knows everything about it and how to predict which one's going to make it.
When you think you know everything about it, somebody comes and teaches you a little more.
Boy, isn't that the truth? Absolutely. you know, if the one, and I'll tell him a little bit here, but it's not an excuse, but just illustrates our point. Oh, a couple of years ago, the fever dog, the plot dog we have, he was qualified for the, I believe this was the tournament champions. It might have been the world hunt, but it was one of the qualifier, the zone hunts or whatever that you have to go to get into the final. And if the one thing this dog does is he goes hunting, he goes hunting. And, you know, he, on that cast, they weren't doing anything much. And on, he hunted about half the cast and just said, okay, I checked this whole area out. I'm done. He just came in and kind of stood around out there outside the light. And you're like, what's going on with the dog, you know? Of course, later on, we did have him check for Lyme. And he was positive for that, but I don't know that that was, I'm not going to use that as an excuse. I'm going to say he's a dog, you know, and on certain nights, they're going to do, you know, what they want to do, and only they know. And yeah, that's interesting. Well, back to this boy, you know, with this dog, and he sends this puppy, and man, I don't know anything about Bill Feldman and his dogs, but every time I mention his name, someone says that he's got good dogs. So good for him, and he's really made a young man down in Alabama happy soul.
Hey, yeah, that's right. He seems to be a nice gentleman. I only hunted with him at one time, and the female he had at the time was a darn nice dog. We took turns winning that cast at first. I was winning it at first. Then Kaufman was winning it on the second coon. Then Feldman come on a third one. And I think at the last, I believe the dogs all split tree. We found Feldman's coon. He won the cast fair and square, and his dog did a good job. It was a good hunt. With no arguments, no pulling pistols or anything like that.
Well, you know, down through history, I've had the privilege of hunting with some really nice red dogs. And being there in West Virginia where I was, and I've said this on a podcast, probably with you, the Harper boys. In fact, I just, Sam Harper's a grandson of Adrian Harper. Adrian was a brother to Kenneth Harper. Kenneth bought some really nice, well, they did together. They liked red bones. They bought a dog called Bruce's Big John. Out of Tennessee, I think he was.
I didn't know Big John, but I knew a lot of dogs that Jim, Bruce had. Jim ain't his first name. What the heck was his name? First name? Oh, James Bruce.
James. Well, and then they had one. I think they called Ruby that came from Tucker out in Missouri there somewhere, and they had one named Spoon River Andy. Do you remember that dog?
I hunted with the dog. He went to later went to Iowa, and I can't. The guy's first name was Milton. I can't think his last name. The guy came all the way from Iowa and bred a female to, I believe, my Hickory dog at the time. I'm not sure which dog, but he came all the way. And when I went to Kirksville, Missouri, which is only 25 miles from Iowa line, them guys lived in that area. And they came down to the hunt, and they took us hunting, me and John Chilser, who had walker dogs. He went out there with me. And I think Andy was one of the dogs that Milton had. And if I'm not mistaken, we seen 18 coon in 2.5 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I remember, now I don't remember too much about each one of those dogs. I remember the Bruce's Big John dog was a light red colored dog. He was almost a yellow colored dog, and he curled his tail up over his back. I do remember, we mentioned earlier, the Northern Chief dog, Blakesley bred.
Yeah.
Of course, he was a big, handsome, right, real hound.
Yeah,
big dog, dark, as they like to say, dark cherry red, you know. And he would climb up on a tree, and he could stand real tall on a tree. And I knew, and had a good mouth and all that. And I mentioned he was sold to Jimmy Fisher in Leeds, Alabama. Well, Leeds is the home of Charles Barkley, the basketball player.
And
Nubbins sees him occasionally around town there when he's over there shopping.
Excuse me 1 minute while I think of it. When you talk to your good buddy Nubbins, ask him if if he lives in Alabama. I always called this guy the king of the Alabama coon hunters. His name is Harold Edwards.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards has passed away.
I figured that. I tried to call him a couple days ago, and the phone's disconnected. Mm. And I told my buddy, because my buddy wanted to know something about a guy in Alabama. I said, this guy will know. And the operator come on and said, the phone's disconnected. So I figured he had to be in his 90s because I know he was older than me. Mm-hmm.
I had a few phone conversations with him.
He was a hunter. He was a hunter.
There was a boy from West Virginia, Roscoe Mills, that moved down to Alabama to work in the coal mines. He was a miner there in southern West Virginia. And he, of course, hunted. And at that time, he had walker dogs and all. But I think maybe later some English. But Roscoe hunted with Harold. And yeah, there in his latter years, you know. So
there's one more guy I want to ask you about. I don't know. He bought a lot of dogs off me in the early years, and he lived down in West Virginia. Edsel Gibson. You ever hear of him?
Edsel is a fairly common first name down that way. I knew
he lived in Branchland, West Virginia.
Grand Slam. You sure it wasn't Grand View or something like that?
No, Branch. Branchland. Branchland.
Oh, Branchland. I see. Yeah. No,
that's right out of Charleston.
What's his last name again?
Gibson. G-I-B-S-O-N. Gibson.
Was he a Redbone guy?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Hmm. Well, you know, that name is ringing a bell, Fred, but I can't put a finger on it.
He used to call me on Sundays and say, listen to this. We just cut another record. Him and his sisters and brothers sang church hymns and so forth. And
gospel music. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were on radio every Sunday. And he'd play a record for me.
You get to listen to it, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to ask you about one, and you've mentioned him on here before, and I've tried to get a hold of him here lately. And I hope he won't mind me mentioning his name, because I think he would have a lot of good stories to tell, and I'd like to bring him on the podcast, Kerry Rooks.
Kerry won't have time for that, but we talk together at least 2-3 times a week. And that man's probably had more dogs than any five
guys
combined.
That's what I'm knowing. And I think he's Fred Bright. Did you know Fred Bright, the black and tan?
From Tennessee.
Then he moved down to Georgia and retired. And Fred's not hunting. Well, he's doing some beagling, I think. Fred had a stroke here a few years ago, and it's kind of, you know, left him weak in one side and all. But Fred and I talk. In fact, I've had him on the podcast a couple of times. But, Fred said the other day when I was talking to him, he said, Steve, anybody that's ever unsnapped a hound has got a story to tell. you know. And I thought, man, that is great. I need to frame that.
Yeah, pretty much so. But as far as Kerry, the man's, he called me a couple days ago and told me, of course, everybody that knows him knows he's a funeral director and a county coroner.
Yeah.
He told me, he says, the police called him a couple nights ago. He said he was ready to go hunting. He had to go up to Byron, Georgia, which is north of him, and pick up a body. He said the woman weighed 500 pounds. He says he got three or four policemen plus him and somebody else to get her out of there.
Oh,
I imagine he had a trip with that.
Had to take a skid steer or something like that.
I don't. 500 pounds.
Well, I don't mean to make fun of anybody's physical condition, but man, that's heavy. I think I'd get on Weight Watchers or something before I hit 500. Sometimes I think I'm heading that way when I look at my belly.
That's a big woman, 500 pounds.
That's a lot of woman. The old saying is, when she sits around the house, she sits around the house.
Well,
bless her soul. If she's departed, we don't want to.
He don't have the time that he wish he had.
He's an interesting guy that I've never really got to spend any time with, and I'd just like to do that because his name has come up for all the years that I've been involved in these coon dogs. I know Kerry's not a young man anymore, some of us.
I wish I had a nickel for every dog he's on through his lifetime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And some darn good ones, too.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you talk to him, you tell him I'm after him. And if he can spare me even 30 minutes, I'd just love to have the opportunity to talk to him. So, yeah.
Either he'll call me or I'll call him by Sunday, one of the two.
Well, that'd be great. That would be great. Well, listen, how are you coping with this cabin fever? I mean, 3 weeks you say you haven't been hunting.
I'm disgusted. In 89 years, to me, this is the worst winter I've ever seen that I can remember. I remember going to school. We didn't have school buses then. We had to walk to school, and there was no deal where they closed the school for 2 or 3 days. You went to school. I remember walking to school in 1952, and the snow was up to my knees. School was only about a half a mile away, but nowadays they'd close the school, and you'd be sitting at home, but not back then. But
that would have been the year I started first grade, Fred.
This is disgusting as heck, and this weather condition.
Yeah, I know. I living in Michigan like I did for about 22 years, and, you know, at this time of year, man, I would go hunting on nights that I shouldn't go, and sometimes it got me in trouble. We got a couple dogs killed one night. We shouldn't have been out there. It was 6 degrees. There was snow, so much snow that they plowed the roads, and there were just steep banks on either side of the road. Well, the dogs would get in the road and just run the roads because they couldn't operate in that snow. We shouldn't have been out there with the dogs. And as it worked out, I had two dogs, and my buddy John Cripe had one, and it was his I can't think of his name right now, but Hank. Hank was his pride and joy, you know, and we lost the dogs. We didn't have tracking collars back then.
Right.
All we could do is drive the roads. We couldn't find them. I finally went home about daylight to get a phone call from a lady. She says, "Are you Steve Fielder?" I said, "Yes, ma'am." She said, "Well, I have your dog." And I said, "Well, that's great news. Where are you?" And she says, "Well, it's not really all that good because one of your dogs was killed on the road. We found him laying on the road. And actually, he said two dogs were killed. And I said, well, the one with my name tag on it, which was it black or brown, brownish color? She said black. Well, I knew it was the younger female. Uh-huh. And my older dog, she says, oh, we've got him here. And that was my Ace. That was my Bronco dog that, you know, I really, liked. And of course, John's. So, you know, you do things sometimes when you know better, but you just can't stand to sit at home anymore.
I hunted a lot of bad places that you shouldn't turn a dog loose at, and took a chance. I went over 30 years before I ever got a dog killed, but I sure made up for it in the last 20. Mm-hmm. And I've got more killed than I want. But being you lived in Michigan for 22 years, what's the coldest that you ever treat a coon on the outside?
Well, probably... you say on the outside, and I think maybe only one of these coons. I was on a night hunt one night, and Mike Parrish was on the hunt. Now, Mike is a guy that handled the dog for Alan Snediger named Rock River Gap that won the UKC World Hunt, a walker dog. But Mike, I don't remember what Mike was hunting that night. I know when I pulled in my driveway, after the hunt, it was 6 degrees. No, minus six. And we had hunted along a creek, and the dogs were treeing in den trees, and we were seeing the coons. We saw three coons that night, but there wasn't much for tracks. They'd just come down for water and go back up, you know.
Right.
But it was a still night. It wasn't windy. And I think that was probably the coldest night, but I hunted several nights when snow was really deep and when it would drift up in the fence rows, and the snow would cover the fence post, and there was a wall of snow there, but you couldn't see any fence, you know, and climb over. And I remember the dog, I was hunting a dog called Wrangler, and I hear him going through the woods, and it sounded like a steam engine. He was just, whoo, whoo, whoo. Yeah. You know, he was lunging, you know, it through that snow. That was crazy to be out on a night like that. But there again, you know, cabin fever.
Everybody asked me, you know, what's the worst weather you ever coon on? I might have told you this story before, but I don't think so. One day, Packy, when he didn't have nothing to do, he came down my house. He's only 10 miles away. He came down on a Saturday afternoon, and it was about 4 or 5 o'clock in the wintertime. It gets dark at 6 o'clock. And he says, going coon hunting tonight? I said, you got to be nuts. It was at that time, it was probably... 3 degrees above zero.
Yeah.
I says, you got to be nuts. I says, there ain't going to be no coon moving tonight. He says, well, you're the one that brags how much you hunt and everything. He said, I thought we'd go. Just then, out of the blue, I wasn't expecting him. Nobody. Here comes John Quince from West Virginia and Rocky Ketterman. They come up and they got a dog in a truck. I says, where yins going? Because they don't know nobody up there except me. He said, we come to go coon hunting. I says, more crazy people. I says, we ain't going to. I says, I'll go. I said, but we ain't going to get nothing. I said, we're wasting our time. And he said, well, come on, we're going to go. Well, it was dark, and we sat around BSing for a while, and then, heck, it wasn't long. It was dark. And we went down to my favorite place. You're not allowed to hunt in there. And there's 3,000 acres. And
don't try this at home, folks.
It's got a lot of coon and a lot of deer. They open it for deer hunting every other year for a primitive weapon. But other than that, it's closed for hunting. Well, anyhow, we go to I take them to this hot spot. And if you're going to tree a coon anywhere, that's this place. And we turned loose, and Packy had one dog. I got one. Well, we each have a dog. And Anyhow, Packy's dog strikes first. Then the other dogs get in there. I said, that ain't no coon. They said, what makes you think that? I said, Packy's dog got first strike, and that dog ain't no strike dog. Packy said, Fred, you ain't hunting with her. I sold him the dog. He said, you ain't hunting with her in a long time. He said, she's hunting good now and getting her share of strike. Well, I didn't believe it, but I let it go. There's trailing on, and it sounds like a coon track. And I says, they made a semicircle, come back past where we were, went down the hall, and they treed, and they treed good. I says, well, they treat a coon, but I said, it's on a den tree. I said, there's a dead deer laying down there, and I treed this coon about four nights ago, and it's a big den tree. I give John Quince my pistol. I says, here, just in case you get lucky and see one on the outside, which I know you won't, you can shoot it out. I pull Packy on the side. I says, they got a big hill to climb to get down there to where that dog is. I said, we ain't going down there. Let them bring the dogs back. So me and Packy walked down to the truck. I said, when yous are done, get them off the tree, walk straight down the hill, and I'll pick you up on the road right there. Well, me and Packy go do the easy way. We get back to the truck and drive down the road, and we're sitting in the truck. We could hear the dogs up on the hill treeing, and they're doing a good job. All once we hear the pistol crack. And he shot five or six times, and finally shut up. So I knew they must have got a coon out, and it's on the ground. They're killing it now. I couldn't believe it. We're sitting in that truck, and here we see their lights coming after about 20 minutes. And they throw an 18-pound coon in the truck, and I couldn't believe it. And we went to another woods, turned loose again. We run a coon, and it ended up more or less in a brush pile. So I figured, let's quit while we're ahead. We quit. When we went past the bank lock in Monongahela City, it was 5 below 0. And that was the coldest I ever got a coon. Now, I've been out some cold nights. I treed coon in den trees and that, but I got this one on the outside. It wasn't on that den. John told me it wasn't on that den tree. They seen that den tree. He said that was about 30 yards over from where they treed the coon. He said, and they saw the dead deer laying there and half eaten.
Well, you know, Fred, I might have misspoke, because as I'm thinking back of it, I don't believe it was 6 below. I think it was 6 degrees that morning when I pulled in the driveway. And that was plenty cold for me. But
I told that story to Fred Luber about us getting that coon. He claims, now I know they got a lot of coon. Iowa and Michigan's the two best states in the country for coons. He told me he treed 7 coon at 14 below when they were rutting out in Iowa one night. Hmm. That's for me hard to believe, but I believe Fred what he tells me. He didn't lie too much.
Oh, yeah, Fred. Well, Fred, you kind of knew when he was pulling your leg. He liked a good laugh, you know. But, no, I would believe Fred if he told me that.
Yeah,
for sure. And, Fred, when I lived in an area like Michigan where there were a lot of coon, there was a lot of different things happened. And there's a lot of memories and a lot of stories and all. When you live in a place like this, I mean, you know, my buddy Mac Britt lives a couple hours south of me, and he's a native, and, you know, he's out there. He's got a walker dog. He bought the dog. At first, he didn't like him very much, didn't know if he's going to keep him, but he's kind of turned the corner, and he's doing a real good job for Mac right now. He's out of that dog of Bill Stover's that won the first tournament champions, the Bad Butch dog. And Mac, you know, Mac gets out there and hunts, and man, it's this Florida hunting. It's just bad. It really is.
And hey, I see on television. I don't know. I'm sure you get it on your TV because you're in Florida. All them are not armadillos. All them iguanas, man. Oh, yeah.
That's south of
in.
Us. I hope they don't come up here.
They got them piled in trucks. They fill three pickup trucks.
Well, we got everything. I told somebody one time, everything down here wants to eat me and my pup. You know, there's alligators. We got these big pythons. Now, I haven't seen any of them up quite this far up yet, you know, but they've got those. And they
my kid's down there right now fishing.
Yeah.
At Key West. He goes every year for 2 months.
Well, fishing. He may have been all right the last few days as far down as he is, but, man, it's been cold down here.
It was 57 days ago, he told me.
Wow, that's cold for Key West, real cold. We woke up the other morning here about 3 or 4 days ago. It was 29. Right here. So, you know, we're not used to that down here.
You ever get any snow at all?
You know, I don't know if they've ever had snow right here or not. I always tell this little story. People ask me about snow. I was coming home. My son's grandmother lived in Winter Haven, Florida. And that's not far from Disney World, but between Disney World and Lakeland. We would come, you know, on holidays, Christmas, New Year, or Thanksgiving, things like that. And we left Michigan after work there at UKC and drove to Louisville, Kentucky, and I had a spot that I stayed there usually. We got up the next morning early and drove all day and got to Valdosta, Georgia. And that was our, normal stop off. Now, Valdosta is just north of the Florida line. In fact, it's about 70 miles north of Lake City, Florida. And this, get this, when we got up that morning in Valdosta, Georgia, that close to the Florida line, there was snow, a blanket of snow on the ground. In fact, there was a tennis court right there at that hotel, and it was white. We got on Interstate 77. And as soon as I got out there, I knew I'd made a mistake because the traffic was just bumper to bumper. And we crawled all the way to Lake City, Florida, about 70 miles. Took us, I believe it was like 7.5 or 8 hours to go 70 miles. Because they're just simply not used to that. You know, they don't have anything to put on the roads. They don't have salt trucks down here. I don't think they do. But anyway, yeah, it occasionally in the panhandle, my friend Johnny Brinkley up there in Tallahassee, you know, they get a little dusting every once in a while, I think. But it's been cold. It has been a cold winter here in Florida.
Hey, I talked to a lot of people from Tennessee. They tell me all the ice they got and snow.
Oh, yeah.
Especially the ice. And we sent 1,000 light company workers down to Tennessee and Alabama about a month or 2 weeks ago to work on the lines.
Yeah, my buddy Mark Miller and I have been talking, and he said they had 6-7 inches of snow on top of ice.
Yeah.
You know, that's rough when that happens. But, it's wintertime, and my brother told me the other day that one of the towns here south of us, one of the beach towns, I think it might have been Clearwater or Tarpon Springs, said they had not recorded temperatures this low since 1900.
I could believe that. Yeah. I could believe that.
Yeah, well,
it's bad everywhere.
Yeah. My dad used to quote that old song. I don't know who did it and all, said, put more water in the soup. There's better times coming.
I guess.
Well, Fred, I'm going to let you go, man. It's great to talk to you again. And
thanks for calling.
Yeah, Ben, I really always enjoy talking to you, and the listeners really like to check in with you every once in a while. Get a lot of requests.
Next time you call, I'm hoping the grass is green and I'm out.
That's right. I was going to tell you, I get a lot of requests, but I tell them I don't care. I'm going to put him on anyway. Hey, well, what about JJ? How's he doing?
He called me a couple of days ago. He says, I haven't heard you on the podcast. I says, he'll call someday. I said, he'll get lonely.
Well, tell him goodbye, and we'll shut this thing down.
Okay. Hey, JJ, I'll see you in the movies.
Fred Moran, the Redbone Man. There's one of a kind right there, folks. National treasure. Great to talk to you, Fred, and we'll catch you out here chasing these dogs around here pretty soon.
All right. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay. Good night, Fred.
We'll see you.
Folks, I just love talking to Fred Moran. He inspires me so much. Soon to be 89 years old, you hear that voice. You hear the excitement in the voice. You hear that sharp memory. You know, he gives hope to guys like me here. Fred's about 9 years older than I am. And my buddy Nubbin Moore, he's going to have a birthday here next week. He and I are going to be heading out to Batesville, Mississippi, to the UKC Winter Classic. We'll be staying at John Kyle State Park there in a cabin and burning some wood and probably sampling a little bit of Nubbin's homemade wine, for which he's famous, and looking forward just to seeing a lot of you out there at the Winter Classic. This will air on Monday before the Winter Classic starts on Thursday. I think maybe they've got some slam hunts during the week, but sure am looking forward to being in Batesville, seeing all of you out there that I can. We'll be just kind of, I'm not going to put a booth up this year, be just kind of wandering around, but you'll see a couple old codgers there, you know, and come on up and say hello. If we haven't met before, I'd sure like to meet you. And if not, if we've been knowing each other, if I owe you money, just keep moving. But otherwise, it'll be great to see each of you. For our sponsors, W Hunting Supply. What a great group of people out there in Washington State. I misspoke the other day and said they were in Oregon, but they're in Washington State. They offer everything that you need for yourself and your hounds, whether it's some great-looking apparel, hats, shirts, jackets, hoodies, all of that stuff. They've got all the electronics. They've got the customer support to keep that equipment running for you. They've just got unparalleled customer service. And I just want to thank them so much for sponsoring this podcast. Also to my friend Big Mark Zepp with Zepp Predator Calls at markzepp.com. Mark has a full line of hunting supplies and specialty items that you might not find anywhere else. And that Zepp trademark means it's absolutely the best quality. So look him up, markzepp.com. That's going to do it for this week, folks, from the Gone to the Dogs podcast. Anyone ask you where Steve Field will say, well, he's with that Nubbin Morgan, and they've gone to Mississippi. Man, they've really gone to the dogs.
How many discounts does USAA Auto Insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy discount.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Ready to relax in your dream bath retreat without the stress of figuring out every detail yourself? At the Home Depot, your bath upgrade is covered. Shop fully designed rooms and curated bath collections to go from inspiration to transformation fast. Savings of up to 40% will make it easier on your budget. and find everything you need, from tubs to toilets and all the tile in between, to bring your vision to life. The Home Depot. Dream baths built here.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.